Welcome to the Friedharman Leadership Podcast from the Center for Excellence in Spiritual Leadership, the podcast dedicated to developing and encouraging spiritual leaders for the kingdom. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 10 of the FHU Leadership Podcast, and I'm excited today to have our basketball coach, Drew Stutz, with us. Welcome, Drew.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. I'm excited to be here as well.
Well, and we've got some exciting things to talk about. I know that that you are excited and the whole Friedharman campus has been excited. And I want to just begin by sharing the big news, if you haven't heard yet, podcast listeners out there, about the exciting news we've had at Friedharman. Go ahead, Drew.
We were fortunate, fortunate to be 2024 NAIA men's basketball national champions this year. Just an incredible season. With an incredible group of guys, and really excited that a great season was capped off with a championship this year.
It was awesome. The campus is still abuzz with that. So, Drew, just what were your expectations? Y'all had a great season, and of course, I got to watch a lot of games. You had a great season, but going into the tournament, after winning the Mid-South Conference Championship, what was your expectations?
I tried to just – obviously, just be honest. I really didn't have a big expectation, definitely not of winning the championship. I think we were good enough to win it, going in there thinking, hey, if things go our way, we could compete for it. But, realistically, I just wanted us to play well. Mm-hmm. Anytime you get there and you're in those tournaments, you want to feel like you've maximized your potential. And, if that results in a championship, that's great. If that's a, Sweet 16 or a round of eight. I thought we were capable of making a deep run. But at the same time, I just wanted us to play well because last year I thought we got there and we didn't play as well as we were capable of. So, really, I just wanted our guys to get comfortable and show what they were capable of.
Yes, and you had two games. The first two games of the tournament were here. And then you go to the Kansas City for the national tournament, and so Sweet 16, right, there.
Correct.
And so y'all did well here, and then were able to go on. And so these first two games, did you have anxiety about those, or were those you don't ever count those?
No, absolutely not. No, the first team we played, actually going all the way back, the first game that we played overall, so round of 16, it's set up like an NCAA tournament where you're a one seed and you play a 16. So we were fortunate to be a one this year, and we played a 16, and that team was a really good team. They had just won the Southern States Conference tournament, won eight or nine games in a row. Really a team that was not your traditional 16. So beating them was great, and then playing a good Point Park team here at home that had 30 wins, some really, really talented players. So, I was excited just to win those first two games, and then, given a chance to go back to Kansas City and compete. Playing a team from basically Los Angeles, California, the Masters, a couple high-level players, one big-time Division I transfer. And, every game that you're going to play, you're capable of winning, but you're also capable of losing. Those 64 teams that are in that tournament are in there for a reason, and you got to play well. And to be honest with you, out of all the games that we play, probably that game against the Masters in the round of 16 – especially offensively, we didn't play well. Defensively, we played really well. They were a team that in the round of 32 scored, 121 or 122 points and hit 24, 25 threes in that game. So explosive offensive team. And for us to hold those guys to 68 points in that game, that's what gave us the edge because we only scored 69. So whether it's by one or 10 or 20, it doesn't matter. It's win or go home. And so fortunate to get by and then get to that Elite Eight game and win it as well.
Yes. So before we talk any more about the tournament, let's go back and talk about your background and introduce yourself to the podcast listeners. So tell me where you grew up and some of your background in coaching that led to Friedharman. How many years you've been here?
Yeah, so this is my my fifth year here as head coach. I was here for a year previous as an assistant, just 1 year. But, I'm from Florence, Alabama. My dad's a minister. My granddad's a minister in North Alabama. And Alabama, I guess, home, that's my home. So, being a preacher's kid, we moved around a few times growing up and had an opportunity to attend Mars Hill Bible School two different separate times. And that's where I ended up graduating from. And played a few years of college basketball at University of North Alabama and Northwest Shoals Community College, just a year at both of those places. And then Mike Mitchell, some of the listeners may recognize that name. He's a longtime coach at Morris Hill Bible School, won, I think, 6 state championships there on the women's side. He was coming back to coach the boys' team at Morris Hill. And my dad and him had been friends for a long time. Both of them were Morris Hill grads. And, you know, he just presented me with an opportunity to come over there and start coaching. And I don't know that I was ready to be done playing, but I knew that was a great opportunity. And my 2 years of college basketball had not been the greatest of experiences, but I'd had a chance to learn a lot. And so I just hopped in with Coach Mitchell and started coaching 7th and 8th grade boys at Morris Hill and was assisting him with the varsity team. He was a great mentor, a great Christian man. Just learned a whole lot from him about how to lead a team and how to carry yourself. He's got a great demeanor. And, you know, so really fortunate to sit back and learn from him for 4 years. And, you know, after that, took another junior high coaching position and a PE teaching position in the Birmingham area at a little school called Corner, Alabama. And so after that, you know, one thing led to another, winded up meeting Jim Sanderson and being a JV coach at Hewitt Trustful. I was there for 2 years. And Coach Sanderson then became the head coach here at Freed-Hardeman, needed an assistant coach. And so that's how I wound up at Freed-Hardeman to begin with, was, you know, a series of events and series of people that were in my lives. And so he had a position come open, and I guess he was impressed with me when I was at Trustful. And so I was here for a year and then left to be a head coach here at Chester County High School. And then, you know, just right place, right time, and had an opportunity to come back and lead the program.
And you came back in what year? Or how many years has it
Whatever
been?
Whatever 5 years ago was. So my math's not that good. I'm a PE major, so.
Yes. So you came back to coach here after being assistant coach here for 2 years.
Just one year. Yes, sir.
And you coached at Chester County High.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's really a quick – I know in some ways living it, it probably doesn't seem quick, but really a quick rise into the ranks of coaching college. And a lot of that deals with your leadership, and we want to talk about that. And so before we get into thinking, because this is a leadership podcast, but let's go back to the basketball just a little bit and finish off our story. So that you made it through the Elite Eight game, and then got you to the Final Four. And then you had it play against Grace, the team that put you out last year, and the team that had a 6'10" guy?
6'10", 6'11". He's a big boy.
Yes. And so take us through that game. And y'all shot incredible in that game. Like, the offense watching it seemed to be off the charts in that one, right?
We shot really well, and they shot even better. That's what's crazy about that is I think we hit 11 threes, and I think they hit 16 out of 34. But going into that game, you know, Grace has been basically number one ranked overall for the entire season, a team that put us out last year. And, you know, Scott Moore is their head coach. He does a great job. They've got a great program. I didn't know if we'd be able to do it, just to be honest with you. I knew we'd have a chance if we did some things right. But we just had some guys really on the offensive side of the ball really step up. And you know, our defense, we did what we wanted to do. We wanted to keep them out of the paint and keep the ball out of the 6'10 guy's hands. His name is Elijah Malone. You know, he was National Player of the Year this year. We wanted to keep the ball out of his hands. And for the most part, we did a great job with that. I think the first half, he had 4 points. Both of those were tip-in offensive rebounds. But we wanted to keep that ball out of the paint, force their other guys that are more role players to really step up and take some big shots and hit them. And they did, but our guys did as well. And so just battled and found a way for us to come out on top. And, you know, for them to put us out last year and us have an opportunity to play them in the, you know, Final Four or Fab Four and then beat them to get to the national championship was, you know, that was enough. That was incredible in just itself.
Yeah, it was a wonderful game. And then going to the championship game, watching it as a viewer, it seemed like it really – switch from a offensive explosive game to this grinded out defensive battle between the two teams. Is that the way it felt to you?
That's very accurate. Definitely did. I think, you know, credit to Langston's defense and our defense on making it tough. And the officiating in that game was a little inconsistent at times, but once the game kind of settled in, they let us both play, you know, so just extremely physical game. And you know, that's one thing about this team that's probably different from some teams I've had in the past as far as this style of play. You know, we can beat you in a lot of different ways. We got a versatile team. We're not a team that just shoots the ball well or just defends well, or we can play a lot of different styles. We've got 10 players that play a lot, and throughout the course of the year, a lot of those guys play similar minutes. But in certain games, depending on the way that the game is being played and the way the game is being called from an officiating standpoint, you got to make some adjustments. And so we went with some lineups that were not traditional lineups for us. They were more defensive lineups, more physical lineups, because that was the way the game was going. And, fortunately, we pushed the right buttons at the right time and had the right people in the game, and those guys were ready for their moment. And, it feels good when you get it right, so.
Yes, yes. Well, we could talk about basketball for another hour here, but I want to move some of these important questions that I have for you that you've thought about. So this is a leadership podcast, Drew, and we think about leadership and for church leaders, but also for business leaders and for all of us. And coaching has a lot to do with leadership. And so when you think about leadership, what's your philosophy of leadership that you try to bring as the coach of the team?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I'm that smart. A lot of things I do feel like common sense, and I've had a couple conversations with folks, but to me, leadership is all about you just setting the tone individually. The way that you carry yourself, to me, that's how you lead. It's easy to get up and make a PowerPoint and say all the right things, but the beautiful thing about basketball or about being part of a team, especially at the college level, we spend a lot of time with each other. Mm-hmm. We lift weights throughout the course of the year, three or four times consistently in the morning at 6:30. Guys stop by the office. You have individual meetings with those guys. You have practice. You have film sessions. So you spend a lot of time. And, you do need to say the right things, obviously. But I think it's more so you can't fool these guys. They know who you are. And they know who you are by your actions. And so, I just try to live it and be, the culture that I want to establish. And one of those things is just being consistent, showing up every day with the right mindset and the right demeanor about you, and not letting, the good or the bad in your life really affect you in how you carry yourself when you're around the team or around your family or anybody else for that matter. We're all going to have bad days. We're all going to have good days, but you still got to show up and you got to be the best that you can be for the people that are in your life.
That's good. That's good stuff. So you talk a lot. I hear, interviews and just listening to you talk to the team, you talk a lot about culture, and y'all have even used it in shirts and things like that. So what do you mean by that? What type of culture are you trying to instill in your team? And why is that important?
Culture is important because, it's at the core of everything, the way that we go about developing the culture, number one, is by bringing in the right people. There is a certain, we'll talk about this in a few minutes. There are certain things that we really focus on that we try to instill in these guys, but I also think, being a college coach, you have the pleasure of being able to recruit specific people. And so I think a lot of that starts with, you really putting an emphasis on bringing in the right guys with the right character traits, because people are who they are. We all have the ability to change, but at the same time, you can't take somebody that's on zero and expect them to be on 10 when they show up and put FHU across their chest. It doesn't work like that. So I would say something I feel like we've done a really good job of is really vetting out the players that we're recruiting and finding out about who they are and what their family's like and what culture maybe they're coming from. And it's not that everybody comes from the same background, but it's more so their character, finding out really what makes them tick and what matters most to them, and then communicating to them what matters most to us. A lot of times I think in college coaching, coaches sometimes recruit to what that player wants, and they want to tell that player all the good things about them and what makes them special. But really, when we recruit based on who we are and what we're about, and we invite people to be part of the culture or the family that we've created. And if it's something that attracts them to us, it's probably something that's important to them. So, some of those things, if you break it down into just some basic character traits that we emphasize throughout the course of the year, hardworking, you know, sounds like a real simple one, but, you know, that's one of the, we've got five of them: hardworking, unselfish, tough, accountable, and joy. Those are the five core traits that when people see us play, or they see our guys in a practice, or they see our guys in a classroom, we want them to be known for those things. They need to be things that embody just who we are. So, I mean, obviously hardworking speaks for itself. You know, we try to go through and define all these things specifically for the guys at the beginning of the year. We sit down, we talk about goals and expectations, and typically we'll do some kind of book study early in the year. But at the same time, we'll go through these traits and we'll have a team conversation about, you know, what does tough mean? What does unselfish mean? What does hardworking mean? Because it can mean different things to different people. And so we try to really do a good job of sitting down and defining what those things mean to our team and what that looks like for us. And so something as simple as hardworking, our definition for it is elite performance requires elite preparation. You know, and so we go through unselfish, and I may mess up a few words, so if some of my guys are tuning in, they'll give me a hard time about this. But, you know, unselfish, do you make the people around you better?
Yeah.
You know, and so we go through these things, and accountability, do your words and your actions match? You know, it's easy to sit in there at the beginning of the year and say, hey, I want to be a national champion. I want to go back-to-back. But do your actions match your words? And so that sets up that accountability phase. And so we go through those things and try to emphasize them. And, you know, all those things kind of, if you think about them, they round out, to me, a great team and a great culture. You know, a group of guys that are going to play hard and give their best effort, a group of guys that want to make the people around them better. Being accountable right now is not maybe one of the most attractive words that's thrown out, but when you understand it, I think it probably helps you create some toughness. You know, player to player, coach to player, player to coach sometimes. You got to have that accountability, and that accountability can create some toughness. And then last, you know, we want it to be an enjoyable experience. We want you to love the game of basketball. We want you to love the people that you're doing it with. We want you to love the university that you're at. And so I think when you take all those things, and those are, you know, some points of emphasis that we have throughout the year, and you really emphasize them consistently, it helps you embody that and give you a vision for the culture that you're trying to develop.
That's great. Great stuff. And also, what I'm really hearing from you say is that you have these words, but you try to allow the words to become actions that they see that you then emphasize throughout the whole season.
Correct.
And you tell stories about that, and you emphasize that. We talk a lot about that on this podcast and other times with the churches, that if you want your culture is there, but you got to reinforce that culture through stories, through examples, through sermons. You know, that has to, through actions,
Absolutely. Is
how that culture is seen.
And it's got to be something you continuously talk about. I think that's really important. You know, it's easy to lay out a mission statement or a vision mm-hmm. for things, and then you as a leader, you know, you may have that in your mind, but if I go to my players right now, I say, hey, what are the traits of our culture? Like, what's important to our team? And they can't list those things out, then really your vision is dead. You
That's
know,
right.
it holds no weight. So you got to go back and you got to consistently push and push and push and emphasize those things to folks. And to me, that's really important.
Yeah, it has to be repeated regularly, and it has to be reinforced by action. So there's one big thing that I think everybody talked about with this year's team that I want you to comment on, and you talked about it a little bit already, about this unselfish nature, and you talked about that in the core principle. But when you're playing 10 guys, and you only got 40 minutes, and there's only, you know, so many points, and guys want to score, guys want to rebound, how did you keep such a talented group, and so many, there's a quality across the board. These guys, sometimes you could change their jerseys, and you wouldn't recognize the difference in these guys. How did you keep them all on the same page and not being jealous of each other when you're running five guys in and out?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. you know, I think probably relationships probably is at the core of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you take – let's just take our two point guards this year. Both of those guys could probably be for sure Division II, probably low Division I point guards. And here they are splitting minutes with mm-hmm. each other. You know, both those guys played 20 to 24 minutes a game. But JJ and Quan, those are the two point mm-hmm. guards we're talking about, those guys care about each other, you know. And I think that's, you know, partly just some of the culture that we just talked about. You know, it's bigger than just their performance on the floor. You'll see Quan on the bench when JJ's playing well. He'll be his biggest fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really wish that I could put a finger on exactly what it was or what it has been to create that. I don't know if it's just the quality of people that we have. I do think, you know, with the recruiting process, you know, I try to lay out that, you know, we have a great team, and you mm-hmm. can complement our team, but we're not looking for a superstar. You know, we're not looking for somebody to come in here and average 20 a game. And even right now as we're recruiting, you know, there's some guys that we're talking to right now that, you know, maybe might be a transfer, might be a big-time high school player. And you try to go ahead and you define what it is we expect from them and what their role may look like. You know, and I'll tell people, you know, the best players are going to play, and, you know, you need to understand we have a great team and you will complement our team really well. But we're not expecting you to come in here and be a guy that scores 20-plus points a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you want to be a part of a winning program and you want to be part of a winning culture, you want to be at a great university, and you want to have a great experience, this can be a great place for you. But don't feel like, you know, everything's going to hinge on Josh scoring 20 points every night, because that's not the way things are here. And so, you know, again, it sounds easy, but going through that recruiting process, go ahead and getting ahead of yourself and saying, hey, you know, we know you're a great player and this is what you've done. This is what we need for you to do here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that depth, there's different times throughout the year where guys have been able to step up, maybe when an injury or sickness or foul trouble or different things. And so it's something that, you know, I try to emphasize throughout the course of the year, is just being ready for your moment. And that looks different all the time, you know, but be ready for your moment. You got to stay ready and you got to be ready. And the only way to do that is being great in that day, in that practice, in that film session. And, you know, it prepares you. It gives you an opportunity to be ready when your number's called. And, you know, I think throughout the course of the tournament this year, you saw that. I think we had five different leading scorers in six games. Quan was battling with some sickness. J.J. Wheat stepped up in a huge way in that Grace game and, you know, played, I think, 28 minutes in that game, mm-hmm. maybe 30 minutes in that game. And so getting back to, I guess, the leadership and the side of that is, you know, just go ahead and putting your expectations out there for what you expect from that person, and not misleading them to believe that they're going to come in here and, you know, be the superstar and everything revolves around them.
Really, one of the things that I hear you saying that I believe is a coach's job is to tell people their roles. This is what, and to get everybody on the same page so that you're all pulling for that same going. And you've done a great job with that with the team of getting them all desiring the win. And if we all work together, we can accomplish that. You seem to have a calm demeanor. It may be going on, a lot of stirring up inside, but from the outside, watching you from the other side of the court, it looks like you're calm. Is this purposeful or natural, or is that intentional in your philosophy of coaching, or is that just kind of how it's worked out?
I think a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I think there's times that, you know, as a coach, either you need to be calm or you need to get fired up, depending mm-hmm. on the situation. You know, I heard a coach a long time ago, Scott Sanderson. I used to go to Lipscomb's camps growing up, and I can remember sitting around, you know, being 16, 17 years old, and I remember him saying, don't throw fastballs, throw curveballs, you know. Mm-hmm. And kind of as he was talking through that, you know, in those moments where it seems like everything's going wrong, that's when you need to be the calm.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you need to be acting like, hey, we got everything together. And then sometimes, you know, you may be ahead by 30 or 40 points and everybody think, hey, let's have a good time and enjoy ourselves, and you need to flip a switch and you need to push those guys to be more. So I think a lot of it, you know, I don't know if this is the right term, but just knowing the pulse of mm-hmm. your team, feeling, and, you know, my sister Abby, she's the assistant women's coach here, so we talk through a lot of ball. And, you know, I really think it's just a feel thing. You know,
yeah.
The more coaches that I've observed and that I've been able to coach with and watch coach, you know, I think coaching is more of an art than it is a science. You know, I think just like certain people have certain talents and gifts that they've been given to do certain things, I truly believe this is my calling and this is where I should be, and that's coaching. And I think God has just blessed me with the ability to know when to push the buttons and know how to carry myself in certain situations and know how to read people and understand what makes people tick. And so you take all those things and you try to combine them. And in some of those biggest pressure situations, you make a decision in the moment of what does this moment call for? Does it call for, steadiness and calmness and breeding confidence in your team? Or is it one of those where they need to be challenged and they need to be pushed?
Great comment. So as a leader in any kind of perspective, that's reading the situation and recognizing the reality and then reacting to it. And the more calm and reflective we can be, the better. Great thoughts. So kind of parlaying from that, so how do you keep them motivated over a long season? How do you keep your players motivated? Especially, you guys struggled a little bit with getting competitive games because of your talent level. You were beating a lot of teams by quite a bit. And so how did you keep them motivated knowing that the competition was certainly going to come?
Sure. Well, you got to pace yourself. That's probably something early here that I did not do a great job of or really understand. You want to be the best team that you can be throughout the course of the year, but you also got to understand that this thing is a marathon and it's not a sprint. And you got to pace yourself and you got to know when to, pedal to the metal and let's back off and give them a day off or a couple days off. And again, I think some of that comes down to feel, but at the same time, I think the standard is the standard, no matter if you're beating a team by 40 or you're losing by 2 or 3. I don't think that you change what the expectation is based on the results. I think the expectations have got to be the same no matter what, and if you're a fifth-year senior or you're a freshman or we're playing a team that's not very good or that we're making not look very good and, we're ahead by 30 with 4 or 5 minutes to go in the game, I think your approach as a coach has got to be consistent and the standards have got to be the standards no matter the situation. And I think a lot of times you see, and I've learned that from experience, I've definitely not done a great job of that over the course of, the last 10 or 15 years, but through experience and understanding and learning, reading, and, just filling out what great coaches do. I'm from the state of Alabama. I'm an Auburn fan. But, Nick Saban, just incredible leader. And, I've read a few of his books and watched quite a few interviews and different things that he's done. And, that's one of the words that he says is the standard is a standard. And so I think you can see that as he coaches an Alabama football game that really doesn't matter what the score is. There's a certain way that they're going to want things done, and that's the demand. And, ultimately, winning the national championship, I wouldn't say is the ultimate goal, but maximizing the potential of your team is your ultimate goal. And the only way that you can truly do that is by coaching those guys up to be the best versions of themselves every day, whether that's a practice or whether that's a game. I try to do my best to help those guys reach their potential, and I think the only way you can do that is just by being consistent with your demands.
So we've talked about a lot of great things, and a lot of this has come from a basketball context, obviously, as you're the basketball coach here. But you've had a lot of experience in the church and working with other groups. So what principles for our listeners out there would you see that kind of convert over very nicely to a church context or to a business context that we've talked about here today?
Man, you sent me a list of these questions, and honestly, I didn't read through them very closely. So that's a pretty deep question there. I think at the core of everything, it goes back to relationships and getting to know people and meet them where they are. Whether that be church or whether that be business, I think, typically in most of our lives, we're busy and we're on the go and we were just talking about kids before we got on the air. I've got 3 young kids. You've got 6 kids. And so we've all got lots going on in our lives. And I think sometimes we can think that the world is revolving around us. Mm-hmm. And here's what I've got going on here. You get so caught up in what you're doing and what's going on in your life that sometimes you can forget that other people got a lot going on in their lives too. And the only way that you can meet them where they're at is a slow down and to get to know them, and you got to be intentional about that sometimes because it's not gonna, It may not be the most important thing for you in that moment, but if you've already got that mindset of being able to slow down and kind of be where your feet are and take the time to really ask, how are you doing? You know, I know in churches everybody comes up and, you know, how are you doing? Everybody says mostly the same thing. I'm doing well, doing well. But, you know, really you can kind of tell when somebody comes up and ask how you're doing versus somebody saying, hey, how you doing? You know? And I think just slowing down sometimes and taking time and being intentional about going and grabbing lunch with a coworker or somebody from your church, or, you know, for me, a player, and taking time just to see what's going on in their lives. Because it's hard to lead if you've not built that relationship. And so I think from a lot of different standpoints, whether it be business or ministry, you know, my dad's a minister, and, you know, I've learned a lot from him just from observing him, you know, not even really intentionally doing that, but just naturally observing him. And I think that's one of his, you know, strongest things that he does, is he does a great job building relationships with people and being there for them, you know, in the good moments and the bad moments. He's always been extremely intentional about supporting people. Even kids in our church that have a football game or have an event. But I think you being there and showing up for people and taking time to get to know them really gives you a good baseline on, you know, where that person's at and what they need from you and what you can give that person.
Great thoughts. So it's all about the relationships, whether you're trying to get them to perform on a basketball court or you're trying to get them involved in your church family and get the most out of them. You got to love them first. People know if you
Absolutely.
Love them. They do. So, Drew, congratulations again on this NAI championship, and what an accomplishment. And congratulations on bringing such a context and culture of love and accountability and hard work to our students. I'm friends with and teach a lot of the basketball players, had most of them in class, and just great guys, and enjoy working with them and appreciate what you're doing with them. And so, as we bring this to a close, is there anything else that we've that maybe you haven't been able to talk about that you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
We've talked about a lot today, a lot of good things. I've really enjoyed this, but you know, I'm just extremely blessed. Freed Hardeman University is an incredible place to be at as a coach or faculty or staff member. I think just the culture of our school is a great place to come and to grow, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. There's so many different things that are going on here where, you know, if you want to grow and you want to build great relationships with people, this is a great place to do it. But there's nothing special about me, and I mean that when I say that. I mean, I've just been extremely fortunate to have great people in my life that I've had an opportunity to learn from. And God's just really continued to bless me. I'm not sure why he continues to do that, but I hope he continues to do that in the future. But I don't know that I have always been faithful to God, but God has always been faithful to me, and I'm extremely thankful for that. And, you know, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be here and just super thankful that President Shannon and Coach McCutcheon, you know, 5 years ago just gave me this opportunity, and I'm thankful that I've had the right people surrounding me for the last 5 years to accomplish some great things here. And, you know, obviously winning a national championship is an incredible feat, but, you know, one of the things that we talk about is, you know, when I meet these guys 10 or 15 years from now, I will have found out what kind of coach I was, because I want to make an impact in these guys' lives way beyond just winning championships, but really helping develop them to become great leaders and great husbands and great dads. And, you know, and hopefully along the way, I'm having an impact on those guys' lives.
Amen. Amen. One of my favorite moments of the telecast was at the end when they're interviewing you. And you bring back to the culture of Freed Hardeman and what we're about at Freed Hardeman, and what you're about in your life when you reference God and talked about your humility and about where you were 10 years ago coaching junior high and how God has brought. And I just thought that was such a great way to capture what Freed Hardeman's about, what the men's basketball program's about, and about, yes, this is a great thing, but all this comes from God. And that was great. And then we have the Riley comment about the sweet tea that was we had the serious and the humor all going together.
Riley likes his sweet tea for sure. So
well, Drew, we really appreciate you being on the show, and we want to encourage our listeners to share this podcast with others. And we want to encourage you to continue to listen to future episodes. We're going to have one more episode of this season. And thank you for being a listener. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fried Harmon Leadership Podcast. For more great content and to see the services the Center for Excellence in Spiritual Leadership offers your local congregation, please visit www.supportingspiritualleadership.com. Until next time, remember, God uses ordinary people to lead His people into extraordinary feats.